Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
I want to dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host Ed in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, Edward. How are you?
I'm doing quite fine this evening.
Great.
And we are also joined by our other co-host, Katrina. What's going on, Katrina?
Not too much.
All right. Cool. Well, I hope you guys had a happy New Year. And why don't you tell us what y'all did for New Year's before we get started here?
Go ahead.
I drank a lot and threw up. About it.
I kind of figured. I had a very PG New Year's. Had some friends over. We played some board games. We ate. It was fun.
You do know that board games is actually a gay sexual reference, right?
I'm sorry?
How so?
Yeah, and how do you know?
How do I know? Because I listened to the Sinbad and Jakey show where Jakey asked that song if he played board games. And that song said yes.
Well, get this drop. Jakey, I'd be more than happy to play board games with you.
Yeah, that's just because you don't need a power bomb.
Well,
you know it's okay to be gay in 2013, right?
Who's making fun of her being gay? I'm not making fun of anyone for being gay.
Yes, you are. That's what you do every week. You tell everybody they're gay for doing something.
Yeah, be a star, Ed.
Haven't you ever seen the South Park where it turns out that gay means more of like an asshole than an actual, like a
I don't like bullshit like that.
If you call someone a faggot, you're not calling them a faggot because they're gay. You're calling them a faggot because they're a faggot.
Tell me more.
Well, what's a faggot then?
On the South Park episode, it was like a biker gang that made all their noise over the bikes, so everyone was calling them faggots.
I don't watch that shit.
It's a good show. You should watch it.
It's a cigarette in the UK, isn't it? Yeah, they're like, you're smoking a fag.
Yeah.
Whatever, but like I said, I wasn't trying to get
you. You need to try tolerance in 2013, Ed.
Off the rails, 3 minutes in.
I'll see if I can make it my New Year's resolution.
No, it's too late for that. Better try for 2014.
All right. Well, does anyone want to ask me my New Year's
one? By the way, right now, as we speak, I am drinking a Coca-Cola in a glass bottle from Mexico.
Those are always good. Those are like the black market Cokes, huh?
Oh, yeah. Except they have them at Costco up here, which is amazing.
They said they got the Heart Attack Grill out here in Dallas. They sell them there with unfiltered cigarettes.
Do you have any? I think I mentioned this before. Do you have any HEBs around your house, Couture?
Any what?
HEB groceries.
I don't know
the letter H, the letter E, the letter B. It's a grocery store. It's a Texas chain. It's only Texas.
I just go to Walmart.
Oh well. If you ever see an HEB, they sell them there. Go in there and you can buy Coke and Sprite.
Okay.
These were at Costco, and they were like $22 for a case. I put two of them in the cart.
For some reason, it's cool to drink Coke out of a glass bottle. I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah. My dad actually has a 1950s-style Coke machine where it's got water in it.
Pull them out?
Yeah, and it's got water in it, and there's a cooler. There's a motor that cools the water, and you reach in and pull them out and take the top off right there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Hopefully you'll leave that to me.
Now, you guys tell me, because I hadn't been listening to any audio or stuff lately. What's this big show that's supposed to be going on?
We're going to get into this now, aren't we?
What? I don't know. I didn't know it was a problem. I was just asking. I don't know.
Well, it's not a problem.
What big show are you talking about?
I don't know. It gets something to do with Buddy Wayne or something. I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Craig's coming out of retirement.
Everybody's coming out of retirement.
Craig's coming out of retirement.
Before. You were no good the first time around. Why are you coming back?
How dare you? You never saw me. I don't know. Buddy wants to do it, so if Buddy wants to do it, I'm on board. So.
He's not working it, is he?
He's supposed to be.
Is he really? I thought he just had like a core surgery.
Yeah. Yeah. He had surgery yesterday. So yeah. And
how is
March 30th? He's pretty good. He's still in the hospital. They got him heavily sedated. He's in a lot of pain. So yeah, he's healing. Apparently everything went well, so that's about all I know. So I think I know as much as you guys, or you know, people that are keeping up with the board know. But yeah, Buddy wants to promote one show. I'm not privy to where it's at yet. I'm not sure about the big star that he's bringing in, but he's talking about bringing some guys from OVW and some of the guys he trained that are in OVW. He wants myself and Vince and Brian to put on the boots one last time. I don't know if he wants to do a tag match. I don't know if he wants to do a six-man, but that's the plan.
And you got to kind of say yes. The dude just had heart surgery. You can't tell him no. So
exactly.
Kind of got you there.
Yeah. Exactly. So how dare I say no? So
Ed, you should go out there and work the show and do a race angle with Colonel DeBeers or something.
Ooh. I'll tell you what, all you painted people.
One thing that's good about the show, it'll hopefully give Vinny an excuse to get back in the gym and start working out, because he's actually gotten kind of big lately.
What do you mean, Vinny? I need to do the same thing.
Yeah, but you've always been big, Craig. Vinny's kind of like, he's like really gotten big over the last couple of years. I remember like one of the, either the second or third Vegas trip, he was actually kind of slim and looking good. And you look at those pictures from the Christmas show, he's gotten pretty big, dude. He's gained a lot of weight recently. I don't know how recent, because I don't see him all the time, but he has gained a lot of weight.
I'm not going to argue with you. I'll leave it at that. Vinny's my friend. I would never poke fun at his weight, especially when I'm a good 70 pounds heavier. Or so, I don't know.
But I'm still waiting for someone to ask me how my New Year's was.
One more time.
How was it?
Well, thank you, Couture. Thank you for asking.
You just said the question. I was just asking how it was.
It was all right. I actually spent pretty much most of the evening at Dave and Buster's playing games and winning tickets. And
take
a little bit of a nap before New Year's. Woke up for New Year's, rode the big fat joint, got fucking stoned as hell, and went back to bed and did the taper off.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't ask that question earlier, because that was certainly a thought-provoking answer.
Well, it doesn't matter what the answer was. It's just common courtesy, because, like, you know, last week I asked both of you guys how your Christmases were, and neither one of you bastards asked me how mine was, so.
Yeah. Well, you're supposed to ask us first. We tell you how our Christmases were, and then you throw in how yours was.
Yeah, you're the host, buddy.
You got a lot of work to do here with it.
Take control, buddy.
Oh.
Well, you know, maybe it's nice to be asked every once in a while, you know.
Oh. How you
maybe I wouldn't be such an asshole, you know, if people were little metrics to me.
How you doing, Ed? Are you all right? Need a hug?
Something's wrong with you. What's your problem?
In your man period.
I don't have a problem. I'm just fucking around. we can go ahead and start. And I guess Couture actually had a couple of things, too, like the show ideas. One of them was a good idea, and I was like, all right, this is cool. And then he's like, oh, I don't have time for that one.
Yeah.
Then he came up with a second idea, which was, like, so stupid. It's like, how are we going to think of that in a couple hours?
What was stupid?
They were all good ideas.
What idea was, and tell me what was stupid about it.
Like, the brilliant matches, how are we going to remember? That's something we need, like, a couple of days to think about. You know,
I'm sorry,
I mean?
You're stupid. I don't have no control over that. I can't help you can't remember shit, and you're on drugs all the goddamn time.
Well, dude,
that's true.
Well, it's not like
I
crazy.
I suggest doing bloodiest brawls or like hardcore matches. I don't think that's like a stupid suggestion.
I thought it was. But your third one was actually
bloodiest brawls means basically any match that there was blood in or a great brawl or something like that. This is not rocket science.
Yeah. Well, I feel bad.
Let's just end the show.
But I thought the third topic was actually perfect, because since we are returning in the year 2013 and making our debut show in 2013, we should do a show on wrestling returns and debuts. And so Contreras, since Contreras picked it, I'll let him go ahead and start.
Okay, I'll start with what I thought was probably the best one was 1999 in Chicago when Chris Jericho made his debut.
Now, I'm pretty sure you knew it was Jericho going into it. Did that?
No, not really.
That, you didn't? Okay.
No.
You
I wasn't
on the
internet back in 99, so.
Okay. Well, it was actually right around the time that I started getting on the internet and checking out all the different copy and paste wrestling sites. Like, I started basically checking out the internet regularly right before he left WCW, where, like, the big news every day on the internet was, like, where he was going. It was, like, you always heard about him every day up until this. And so I pretty much knew it was going to be him going into it. But when he still came out, it was still such a great, even though I wasn't as surprised as probably, like, a lot of other people had still impacted me, and it registered. I mean, it was just such an awesome thing that even though I kind of knew that it was him beforehand, it didn't really spoil the surprise.
Still one of the best crowd reactions, I think. One of the best pops I've ever heard. When his name flashes on the screen, and, I mean, the crowd just, like, fucking roars.
You know, I read his book, I think it was the second one that he did, and he was really disappointed with that because he thought The Rock totally overshadowed him on that night.
Well, I mean, he was coming in as a heel, so...
Yeah.
I don't really think he overshadowed him.
I don't either. But he felt that way.
Yeah, but he's one of those guys that's always like his biggest worst crit.
Yeah.
That's why he's so good. I mean, you look at the best performers, they were like the worst critics, like Benoit, Eddie. They were never ever happy with their matches. Daniel Bryan,
even though
they
were out there having great matches.
Yeah. They're not happy. They just think they think everything's terrible. So of course, like he's going to think that because it pushes him to do better. But like what you said about the crowd, it's like a wave. Like it's just such a weird pop. I mean, it's like it's not all of a sudden. It's kind of like you just like build, and then like it peaks, and. That was a pretty awesome audience when they did it, you know. And I thought the whole thing was well done, you know, with the Millennium Clock. And then Chris Jericho always had, from the second he debuted right there, one of the best theme musics of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I just thought it was cool he coming over from WCW, he'd be gone for such a long time. And he's actually come back a couple times. And it's good every time.
Yeah, I remember when they were trying to break the code, like a few years
mm-hmm.
later.
Yeah.
That's yep. pretty good. And
yeah.
What an idiot is letting him get away. It shows us who people run WCW were.
I know, and the thing is, they gave him such... Like, the stuff that they did give him was such, like, stupid and was basically there to bury him, and he just got everything over. I mean...
Yeah.
You know, like I said before, one of my all-time favorite things ever in WCW in that Nitro era was fucking the pay-per-view where he's talking about how he's going to wrestle Goldberg, and he goes around and does his Spinal Tap and gets lost in the outside of the arena, walking with Ralph
yeah.
out there, and then... You know, all that, and he wrestles the Goldberg midget, and then I love how he screams when the little Goldberg midget speared him. That was fucking hilarious.
I like when he's supposed to get locked out of the arena but opened the door on accident. And had to close it and act like he was locked out.
Yeah. WCW.
But yeah, I mean, that's got to be like the most successful debut. I mean, you basically took a mid-card reject from WCW and made him a main eventer within seconds.
Yeah.
Hi, Greg. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Craig.
Oh, you guys, my phone cut out for a second. I'm sorry. What's up?
I said it's your turn.
Oh, my bad. That phone thing threw me off. I'm sorry. Shawn Michaels coming back from his back injury, wrestling Triple H at SummerSlam. I thought that was absolutely awesome. He hadn't wrestled in how many years? I'm not even sure. But
four years, I think.
Yeah, and I'd seen one match that he did from Texas Championship Wrestling. With
Justin
Paul Diamond. Was it Paul Diamond that you wrestled?
Yeah, it was Paul Diamond.
He was wrestling his dad. Yeah. Yeah, and so he comes back and faces Triple H at SummerSlam, and the match is just incredible. And
yeah.
Triple H gets the heat on him. And then what does he do? A backbreaker. A simple backbreaker, and the crowd just dies. Oh.
Yep. Well, they built it up like if he takes a bad bump on his back, he's going to be like broken in half or something.
Yeah. And it's just a testament to how an amazing a worker he is, and for him to come back and get that match over with one backbreaker and then have a pretty successful career after that. Just a really awesome return.
He really had two careers, if you think about it.
Yeah.
He had the first one, you know, up until about 98. Then he got a second chance in 2002, which I think helped his career more than anything if he would have never come back. I don't know. I still would have remembered him. Like, I still would have considered him one of the best of all time, even if he hadn't come back, but I think it just kind of confirmed it.
Agreed. He was tremendous before, but, you know, he came back with a different attitude, and I'm not speculating there. It's very well documented. He was a different man when he came back. So,
yeah,
I think that's awesome.
Well, I think sometimes that's overplayed because he was still an asshole. He just wasn't as much of an asshole.
Well, maybe if you toned it down a bit, we'd like you more.
Well, he wouldn't fuck up on drugs and shit like that.
Wow. Well, I don't really think that was like that. That was kind of his problem when he was like, you know, between the return and when he left. But I don't think that was actually a massive problem with him before he left. I mean,
I heard a bunch of stuff when his first run, and he fucked up and everything.
Well, I know he used to do a lot of cocaine, but. You know, most of the stuff you heard about him negatively was more of him just being a dickhead behind the scenes and then being, you know, on drugs.
Well, the Rockers, when they came in, they did some wacky stuff. Got under everybody's skin real quick.
They used to do a lot of cocaine.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's doing drugs, isn't it?
Sometimes when I read Marty Jannetty's Facebook page, I still think he's doing a lot of cocaine.
He's a nut. Something wrong with that guy.
Yeah, he's on drugs.
Right? I just explained it to you. But Sean's return, it's badass because he it's one of those things where, you know, he was so good that he didn't even have to do all the stuff he did in the first run. He just knew how to get to.
He's able to alter his style to work with the guys now. He wasn't doing a lot of the high flying stuff like he used to do when he was in the first run, when he was in his prime and everything. He kind of adjusted his style and I guess to get a little bit of longevity out of his second career.
Yeah. And it, to me, it just made him a better worker. I mean, he did more by doing less. That's the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So any more on Shawn Michaels?
No.
What else is there to say? Come on, everybody.
I like the return when the Rocker returned for that one match with La Resistance.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, that was.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I still figured.
And
out
Marty right. got hired because of that match with Kurt Angle, and we never saw him again.
That's right. Oh, poor Marty.
No, I think we saw him one more time after that.
I don't remember. I just remember that match with Kurt Angle, and then I heard he got signed, and then we never saw him on TV after that again.
He got signed, and then he wasn't.
Yeah. I think we saw him just a couple, not that long ago. But anyway, I guess it's my turn.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I was expecting like a list of like 100 different things, you know, that were promised so I could skim through and pick.
Yeah, my list is back in the vault. In my head.
Well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
But I'll go, to me, I'm going to go with, I'll go with the wackiest debut ever. And that has to be when Tugboat wearing a fur fucking poncho and a sparkly stormtrooper hat busted through the wall and fell on his ass and dropped his helmet, and Ole Anderson managed to speak for him in the background in his gravelly voice. And who could ever forget Shockmaster's debut in WCW?
That's the number one. That's the number one biggest botch of all time, I think. Wouldn't it be?
That's fair to say.
Now, is it the biggest botch because he fell down? Is it the biggest botch because of what he was wearing? Is it the biggest botch because it was Tugboat?
Yep.
Or
I
all
remember
the
Vicious was supposed to act like frightened after this man had fallen on his face and lost his mask. Oh, God, that was terrible.
And a young Cody Rhodes is at home yelling about, "Hey, it's Uncle Fred." but I mean, I don't know how Ole Anderson thought that could work. I mean, cause he just looks so goofy because he's just a flabby guy, and then he's not really. He's wearing that thing, but at the same time, it's like I say, it's like a poncho, so you can still see his flab underneath, depending on, especially when he fell down. And
it looks like a half-ass. Looks like somebody's last-minute Halloween costume. It's okay. I got 5 minutes for a Halloween costume. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go down to Walmart, get a helmet and some glitter, and a poncho.
A hairy poncho.
Yeah.
Yeah, that car's no good.
I'll go.
I don't
with,
have much.
Go ahead.
Talk.
Okay, I'll go with Eric Bischoff showing up on Raw to be made the general manager. That was one of those where, you know, Booker T's talking to Jonathan Coachman in the back, and he gets this weird look on his face like he's seeing something off camera. And the camera pans over, and it's Eric Bischoff, and said, "What the fuck is this? Holy shit." And so he does tell me I just did not just see that. And they come back from commercial, and Vince introduced him, comes out to ACDC's Back in Black as the new general manager. I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty great. I mean, it was, because it was just a total shock. I didn't know about it. It's like one of those things, like I knew about Jericho, but I didn't know Bischoff was going to walk out. It's just that he comes out, and the look on Booker's face is just fucking priceless. And, you know, he does tell me I did not see that. And then everyone bitches about him hugging Vince, but I mean,
oh,
me,
God,
it was,
I guess there's value in that.
It added to, like, the shock of the whole thing, because it's like you didn't believe it at what's going on, and then you really didn't believe it.
They blew $5 trillion in one night because he hugged him. I get so tired of hearing that. God.
It was the most surreal thing to see Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff in the ring together. I mean,
yeah,
for such a long time, they had been just vicious enemies, trying to one-up each other, trying to tear each other down, and then they were in the ring together. So weird to see them standing there face-to-face.
Hey, I give him credit, because I don't know if, you know, if I had gone so hard against Vince McMahon, I would want to go work for him, you know?
Yeah, Vince is going to do whatever is going to make Vince money.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe they did blow some money there. I don't know, but probably. Let's be honest.
I'm sure Bischoff didn't mind going to work for Vince, because I'm sure he got paid quite handsomely.
Well, I just think from where he was, like when being in charge of WCW, I would think maybe he felt like maybe a little embarrassed to have to go work for the guy he tried to put out of business so hard. He used to talk some shit about. I know I probably would.
he's used to putting companies out of business. Look what happened to AWA that last year when he was there.
Oh, I don't think it was Eric Bischoff that company went out of business, to be honest with you.
I think he was behind the whole Team Challenge Series.
Well, AWA was shit even before Team Challenge Series. It was not a...
AWA,
I think, a roster picture.
Was a prestigious territory for many a year. And then Eric Bischoff started working
there. I just wondered if it was every time AWA was any good.
If you look at old aftermags and see who would be in the territory, you would say yes. It wasn't bad when it was on ESPN. We got to see the freaking Rockers. We got to see Mr. Perfect. We got to see
Playboy Buddy Rose.
Yeah, Playboy Buddy Rose.
Okay, that's like two good things.
Leon White.
Bruiser
okay,
Brody.
That was not a good thing.
King Kong Brody.
They had to sell for Vern Gagne, so no, that was not a good thing.
We got to see Craig Stern curl the beers, fuck up and push him his nuka, help the thing and break all his legs to pieces and shit, and he was never the thing.
There's some good
things. Hey, we're up to three good things in the history of DAWA.
Dude, any interview with Mad Dog Vachon from DAWA is gold.
Okay, well, if you think so, then...
Okay, turn the bus back around. Let's get back on topic. Doing good. I will go next. John Cena, when he returned at the 2008 Royal Rumble.
Yeah, that was awesome. Unexpected.
It was awesome because I'm watching the pay-per-view with Brian and Vince and a bunch of other guys. And I finally saw emotion out of Brian Alvarez because they actually got one over on him. You know what I mean? Because when we go to shows, he's stone-faced, and he doesn't react to anything. He giggles a little bit, but he just... I don't know if he's afraid that somebody's going to think he's a mark. I don't know what the deal is. Or if he's so into his, journalistic purposes, you're not supposed to react to anything or what the deal is. But he legitimately was surprised by that, and that was cool.
Yeah, I remember, I think he had, what did he do? He tore his tricep or something. Was that the one where he hip-tossed Mr. Kennedy?
That was his pec.
His pec, where he hip-tossed Mr. Kennedy or something. And
yeah.
He fucked it up. And,
I blame Mr. Kennedy, but...
Yeah, well, he's fucked up a lot of shit, so that's good. and then the music hits, and the crowd goes crazy, and 5 seconds later, there's people booting shit out of him.
Well, they were in the garden, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, the New York crowd was like, wait a minute, we still take that guy.
Well, it's like my ex-co-host, that faggot, the pizza machine, was in the audience. And he hates John Cena. But when John Cena was a kid and he came out, he started going crazy and cheering just like everybody else until he got into the ring. And then he remembered, wait a minute, I hate this dude. And then started booing.
That was one of those returns where sometimes they get spoiled a little bit too much by being on the internet and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we get away from, the genuine surprises and stuff like that, and like this in wrestling. So it's still a little bit surprised.
And that was really a surprise because they were pushing that he was going to be hurt for, a lot longer and was probably even going to miss WrestleMania.
That just shows how much of a fucking cyborg that motherfucker is.
Machine.
Yeah.
He's the prototype.
Yep.
He's the man.
He won that match, didn't he? Yeah, he won the Royal Rumble, didn't he?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Because he'd been feuding with Randy Orton. Is that when Randy Orton kicked his dad in the head?
Oh, my God, he kicked him in the head.
You remember when they turned the tables and his dad kicked Randy Orton in the head? I swear I remember that. At one point, he punted him in the head.
He punted him hard.
I know.
Jeez.
Yeah,
and you know, he's
like, no more.
You know, his dad was he's a promoter, right?
Yeah. He's like a promoter. He's a manager on some shows and stuff like that.
Yeah. So
he works with Dan Marotti.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so I'm sure in the back he was like, all right, Randy, go ahead and lay it in. I want you to look good. And so he did.
That's got to be a hard move to pull, you know.
Oh, yeah.
By that point, because you rear him back, and it's kind of hard. You want to make it look good, but to kind of make it look good, you kind of got to give a little force to it, and can't really pull it, doesn't seem.
You don't actually swing your leg forward, just kind of leave it. So you're actually
just
running
run,
into
run
his
your,
head.
Just kind of don't like rear back and kick, but just kind of run your foot into his head. You know, okay.
Yeah, push your foot into his head, more like it. But
he reared back and kicked the shit out of people.
This is true.
And that's why he can't do it no more.
Yeah.
I guess he was a little bit too good at it.
Well, I guess I'll go, and I'll go with the one that was actually pretty awesome, because and it came at a perfect time, because this company at this time was kind of thin talent-wise, and that's when Eddie Gilbert was fighting the Horsemen and needed a partner, and he brought in Ricky Steamboat, and then he had the awesome series between Ricky and Flair that was really badass, but if you look before that, I mean, the company was real thin at the time.
Yeah, they just sold the company. Turner just bought the company, and a lot of guys were leaving. Dusty had left. Arn Tully had left. It was really, I remember looking back at those shows, like some of the Saturday shows, kind of like a ghost town. There wasn't all that much talent as there was. I mean, there's still a lot of talent, but not as much as there was before. But yeah,
well, like,
Gilbert had...
Like, I love Eddie Gilbert. Eddie Gilbert's, like, one of my favorites of all time. But when Eddie Gilbert's your kind of, like, top babyface against the Horsemen, I mean, or who was he fighting, Flair and Windham? Or,
yeah.
But, I mean, when Eddie Gilbert's your top babyface, I mean, that's saying something, because, first off, he shouldn't even be a babyface. And second off, you know, it's like, you know, there's a big difference between Eddie Gilbert and then you had Ricky Steamboat. When he came in,
well, he was playing like the underdog babyface at the time. It wasn't like he wasn't like one of the main guys.
He was one of the main babyfaces that year. I mean, they were real thin those months up until Ricky got there.
Yeah, but he was playing an underdog character, so it's not like he was this big main eventer.
I guess that's true.
And he had been battling Flair and Windham like a few weeks, and they double teamed him and. So he went and called somebody. I always found it funny when Eddie Gilbert just would come out and, you know, play up to the fans, and this is the same dude going around throwing fire in people's faces in, like, Memphis and fucking South and stuff like that. And,
you know what? He never, ever came off as a sincere babyface to me.
Yeah. Sometimes he was okay.
I mean, he was okay. I mean, he's a lot better than The Miz, but, I mean, he always had, like, for me, he always had this little swarmy quality about him, and it was kind of hard to.
And he comes from Memphis, where one guy turned, like, 95 times in one year.
Well, he pretty much has done that a few years in a row.
Yeah, and so he came out for the tag match and then started hearing the music. What was that music? Alan Parsons Project that Steamboat used.
That sounds right.
The Chicago Bulls thing when they used to come out.
Oh yeah, yeah. The
Eye in the Sky or something like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to sing the tune in my head without singing it out loud.
But he came out to that. They had an awesome match, and he ended up pinning Ric Flair, and they went on to have all those awesome matches.
including a match where Dave Meltzer and Dr. Lucha are in the front row, and Dave is marking out with his curly haired mullet.
That was a sight to see.
I mean, he's not just marking out. Dave Meltzer is marking the fuck out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so unreal seeing that. And he's all jacked up.
Yeah. Yeah. He's sitting there with the guy from with Brad Meltzer from the Chicago Bears, I think.
There was a time, I can't remember when exactly it was, but Buff Bagwell was making fun of Dave and said something about how, Dave, you've never been in a gym a day in your life, and this, that, the other thing. And Brian showed me a picture of Dave tanning out by his pool, and he's got better abs than Bagwell ever had at the time.
I saw a picture of him like he was on a beach with a dog or something.
Oh, my gosh. So
he was all jacked up.
I don't think jacked up is the right word, but he was, yes.
Oh, come on. Dave Meltzer was on the juice. We don't know it.
He was in shape.
He was on at least Acapro or something.
Oh, gosh. Really?
He was following the steroid trial, and thought the only way to do a fair job was to experience being on steroids, I think. So
that's
he went and did fair. That.
Yes, that's why Brian has participated in professional wrestling and now jiu-jitsu, so he can be a student of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think Brian is on steroids, too.
Yeah. I just think he got beat up a lot in real life when he was younger, so he wanted to take some karate or something. That's just
that's
me.
Fair.
I think he gets beat up in real life now, he's so little. It's like, so maybe
I can imagine, Brian's such a smart ass. I can just see him being a smart ass when he was a kid and somebody beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go with
Brian. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, Brian had to work for himself because he, you know, nobody else can stand to be around him.
There's a reason he hangs out with big fat guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To make himself look better in front of all the women.
Yeah.
He was like the Buddy Roberts. He was the Buddy Roberts of the trio with you and Vinny Chris. A little
underwear.
Big guy.
As long as I can be Gordy, I don't care.
Okay, I'm going to go with Ric Flair's return. Can't remember when it was. I mean, where it was. It was in the Carolinas or something, like Greenville or Greensboro or something. When he returned on Nitro after they had sued him, and he had left.
Is this the one with Arn, like where Arn like, introduced everybody?
Yeah. Yeah, when they were
like, oh, I almost forgot the so-and-so.
Yeah, the Fourth Horseman and Flair comes out, and he's already in tears, and the fucking crowd has gone nuts, and he goes in there and cuts his promo on Bischoff, who he legit hated. And he got so worked up, I think he busted his lip open talking.
Was this in 89?
This is in 98.
Oh. No, well, we got like a drop that says Horseman Return 89.
Yeah, that's when the Horseman returned in 1989. This is not that.
Okay, well, I was going to play the clip, but I'm glad I asked before I played it. That would have been stupid.
Okay.
Yeah, I would have done something like that.
Yeah.
What
do you remember about this, Craig?
Very little. I'll be honest with you. This was a time in my life when wrestling did not matter. So, what I know about it is what I just heard, and I think I've seen it somewhere before. But yeah, very little. I'll be honest.
I remember Flair screaming, abuse of power, Bischoff, and said, "You're a no good son of a bitch." You know, crowd is just going crazy. I remember Eric Bischoff came out with, like, this goofy-looking polo shirt because he had to change his other one because Scott Hall had vomited on him in, like, an angle of the previous segment.
I just remember that it was Flair. From Flair's, you know, absolutely insane. He's at, you know, at his best, and he was pretty insane that night. I mean, he really, you could really tell. It's a, you know, it was a work shoot, but it's one of those where you can tell that there's a lot of shoot to it.
Oh yeah, I mean, they had, you know, they filed a, like a big multi-million-dollar lawsuit against Flair because I think it was when they were going to reform the Horseman, but he didn't show up because he was taking his kid. His kid was in a wrestling tournament or something, and he'd had like previous permission to take the night off to go to this tournament, so he didn't go, and so they fired him and then they sued him. So yeah, there was real heat there.
Now, that was Reed, right, the one that was wrestling?
Yes. It was not
David Flair. That's the one that's and that's the one that's wrestling with him in Japan.
Yeah.
That's the one that's a mess head, too.
I thought it was Black Tar Heroin.
Or it was something. It was something major.
Yeah.
Something bad.
Yeah. That's why they're sending him to Japan.
Go ahead, Craig. Good night.
I'm going to go with a debut right now. It was Bad Blood. Undertaker and Shawn Michaels were having an amazing match. One of the best matches I've ever seen. It's phenomenal. And then all of a sudden, pyro goes off and this guy comes out in red pajamas and a mask. Rips the door off the cage and kills the Undertaker. It was Kane. And what a way to debut. But with that said, if that hadn't happened and there was a clean finish, there was a clean finish in the match, but you know, somebody did the job. But at the same time, Kane interfered. So if that hadn't happened, I think that match would have been 5 stars. And with that said,
I thought it wasn't five stars. I thought it was.
I think Brian gave it 4 3/4.
Well, don't get Brian's opinion. Give your opinion.
My opinion is a lot of the times Brian's opinion. It's
why?
Probably.
I think you felt like you're kissing up to Brian. And know all of pro wrestling. Brian's just a little dude with an opinion, and it's usually a wrong opinion. So, you know, take that into account.
Okay, so don't listen to Brian. I should listen to you instead.
Okay, I didn't say listen to me. I just said don't listen to Brian.
Yeah. If it would have had a clean finish and somebody would have gone over clean, it would have been 5 stars. So I'll give it 4 7/8.
Well, the only person that matters when you're talking about stars is Dave, so, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'll go with the chair and say it was a 5-star match, because it was a 5-star match, and just because Kane didn't come out doesn't take away from it. He did. I will say that I did not think that the gimmick was going to work, because his original outfit he came in was just a little too tight for him at the time, and he was slightly flabby at the time, so to me, I was thinking, you know what, this is just like, it's going to be like Zeus. He's going to be there for like a month or two, and then that's it. This ain't going to work, but he made it work.
Well, he had the greatest gimmick of all time to do. I mean, it was just like kind of like another Undertaker. I mean, you don't get much better than that.
Yeah.
True.
He just had to kind of learn all the Undertaker moves, you know, just to kind of play up the whole Brother Brooke. Versus brother thing, so.
Yeah.
And he was used to that. Remember when he was Diesel, when they had him be the fake Diesel, he had to learn like 5 moves. That's all that Kevin Nash had.
Another thing is, early on, he had and I think this affected him somewhat, I don't think he wears them that much now, but he had to wear the lifts back then.
Yeah, because it's like over the years he's shrunk, or he's gotten...
Yeah,
he's kind of small.
Either that, or he's gotten used to working with him, because, you know.
he probably took the list out of his boots after a while. I mean, you know.
He was lucky enough to get one of those gimmicks that he's got enough goofy shit that people are always going to pop for, like whether it's any good or not. So,
I mean, that man has done so much with so little.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's
never been
with all the Undertaker's rejects, basically.
He's never been in a feud that I can name off the top of my head and go, that feud was awesome. You know what I mean? I mean,
the feud with the Undertaker was awesome. Remember when they were throwing lightning bolts at each other?
Oh, jeez.
And he chokeslammed the Undertaker in his parents' casket?
Okay. Yeah.
And they had the Inferno match. That was awesome.
He's done some weird stuff over the years that has been just weird enough to make it absolutely entertaining, like putting Paul Bearer in the freezer.
Hitting J.R. on fire.
Yes. there was, I mean, that whole interview where J.R. had to sit down with him, you know, that was pretty good stuff until the gasoline.
He's great at being
up Linda McMahon on the stage. You can't do that.
Yeah. He's just great at being Kane, and he's great at being Kane, Kane, doing like trying to do like normal stuff. I mean,
and you're writing comedy too. So,
I will say this: the one thing I remember Kane for, and I will always remember Kane for, I was at a house show in Seattle. And Kane had the misfortune of wrestling Rob Van Dam. And it was a no-holds-barred match. And Van Dam threw one of his out-of-control, wacky, flying kicks. You know, the one where he runs and he'll throw both feet at you like he's doing... I don't even know what it's called. It's not a drop kick, but he's like off to the side and throwing his feet in the air. Well, he nailed Kane with this thing, and you could see that he was visibly upset, and you could hear him curse. Kane went outside and grabbed a chair and waffled him with the chair. I mean, it sounded like a gunshot. He hit him so hard. And the chair was dented, and Van Dam was holding his head, and it was amazing. It was like the greatest chair shot I've ever seen in my life, and it was on a house show.
And to a guy who probably deserved it.
True.
And
very true.
Deserved it and probably didn't care that he was getting it, too. But,
this was not a Lance Storm, barely legal chair shot.
That was, a little better than that.
Now you said that Kane hasn't had any great feuds. What are you talking about? He had one of the greatest feuds ever with Pete Rose.
Sure.
Well, that was just like a yearly thing for one segment a year.
It was still awesome. I mean, especially the first one where Pete Rose is just going off on the fans. I mean, Pete Rose was just freaking awesome on that. Pete Rose, I was thinking to myself, he could be the greatest heel manager of all time.
I remember the next year he came out like, wasn't he like in the, what chicken was that? Was it like Philadelphia chicken or, I can't remember.
San Diego chicken.
San Diego chicken. His came with a bat or something. And and then it was unmasked as Pete Rose. I said, oh, God.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ed. It's your turn.
Well, I'll go one up better than Kane, and that'll be the Survivor Series, and I don't know if it was, what was it, 89, 90, 91? Anyway, where the Million Dollar Man has a surprise partner for his team, and it's The Undertaker, and me, Mark Callis, the Ginger from WCW made his debut wearing an Undertaker outfit and just became the greatest gimmick of all time.
Brother Love was his manager.
Yeah, Brother Love was his manager at the time.
And actually, his first name was, his name was Kane the Undertaker. So, I don't remember. Said his first name for just a little bit, and then they got rid of the Kane part and just called him the Undertaker.
And I remember how skinny he was back then compared to now.
Anyway, I had just gotten through like watching him. Like the previous year, he said he's in WCW. I remember he was like the new Skyscrapers. They feuded with like the Road Warriors or somebody, and then he had left. And yeah, then he showed up there. And
I remember like after when he first went to WWF, they would, WCW would always replay the match with Luger and him in the one pay per view.
Yeah, show him get beat.
Yeah.
They did the same thing with Sid Vicious. When like Sid Vicious went to WWF and they showed Luger beating him in like 10 seconds or something.
Also,
they still had the debut of the Gobbledygooker on it.
It had the best debut ever and one of the worst debuts ever.
Yep.
That was really the same year. That's crazy.
I remember this was, it was, he came in, Undertaker pinned, he pinned Coco Beware first with the Tombstone, then he pinned Dusty Rhodes.
No, he
didn't.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. He did pin Dusty, and then he got counted out because he just beat the shit out of Dusty all the way to the back.
Yeah.
And,
so it's my turn now. Okay.
Huh? Well, let's let Craig get his stops in there, because Craig's been kind of quiet this whole show.
I'm distracted. Just
why are you distracted?
It's them. Just go on. That's what we do.
Oh, so it's my turn. I'll go with Scott Steiner when he made his WWE debut with the role at the Survivor Series in Madison Square Garden in 2002. I don't know if you guys remember this.
That's where he came out and, like, confronted Hunter and kind of punked out Hunter?
No. So he came out with Chris Nowinski and Matt Hardy when they were doing some kind of thing in the ring. And they came in, me. They were doing some kind of thing and called the fans stupid, and then all of a sudden you heard the sirens go off and he comes out, and that MSG's always great for a debut because that place just goes fucking bananas.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in there and he toss those two around, and in typical Steiner fashion, when he's got a microphone to his mouth, he says, "Get out of the fucking ring. Give me the fucking mic," or something like that, you know, the way he always did. But, yeah, that was pretty good, too.
And then that led to the infamous match with Triple H, where they had to be in the main event, and they had to go really long, and it really sucked.
Yep. Steiner came up with the Big Papa Pump gimmick too late in his career. If he'd have done that at an earlier time, he'd have been one of the best ever, I think.
Oh, honestly, I think he was at his best before he got all jacked up.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Because when I see him pull off that Hurricane Rana from the top rope now, it's scary. He's going to kill himself.
He was at his best, I think, in like, I don't remember, he was like 1990, 91, 92. I think that was probably physically when he was his best. He wasn't so big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could do like 10 times as much stuff before he got his big. But what was I going to say about him? I just remember that one interview where he was talking about how Pearl Harbor bombed the Germans.
Was the one where he was doing math? Like percentages or something? I can't remember.
I don't know, but he just, if you really look back and if you like transcript all his interviews from like for years, it's like you actually think yourself is like, what the fuck is this dude talking about?
And he's one of those dudes that were, when he was doing that Big Papa Pump and was so huge, he was, like, legitimately scary. I mean, like, frightening.
Yeah.
He'd go around, like, around the ring and kind of get into it with the ringsiders, and he'd think he was going to haul off and knock the shit out of somebody.
I'd run.
Yeah.
Oh, we actually have a caller on the line, so let me go ahead and take the call. And caller from area code 219. Who's this?
Hey, guys, it's Clobro. How's it going?
Hey, it's going, Clobro. How you doing?
I'm all right. I love the show so far. Just another debut slash return. I got two of them, actually, from one show. It's the Raw after Survivor Series 2001. You had first Jerry Lawler coming back after, I think it was like an 8 or 9 month break. I think Heyman took over for him. Then I think the storyline was that since WWE side won, FCW and ECW are all, I guess, gone or fired or up in the air, and Vince opened the show with him firing Heyman and Lawler coming back to a pretty big pop. You guys remember that?
That's when he quit because the cat got fired, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, so
and
later on in the night you had Ric Flair being the commissioner, or the new commissioner of the WWF.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
I believe
he also had the debut of the Kiss My Ass Club on that show. Well, we're
yeah.
in Regal.
Yeah,
wow, that was a pretty memorable show. There's a lot of shit that happened on that show.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite Raws of all time, I would say. Definitely in the top five. But, yeah, I just wanted to bring those up on the show so far, and you guys have a good 2013.
Well, what was
okay,
the second one you wanted to talk about?
He said the second one. The Ric Flair.
Oh, the Ric Flair one. Okay. I just remember, like, the Jerry Lawler, he quit because the cat got fired, and the cat got fired because China got pissed off at the cat or didn't like the cat and got the cat fired. So
she left Lawler.
Yeah.
She left Lawler for one of the dubs or something.
Yeah, not long after. Like,
yeah.
Not long after this happened, so.
Yeah, that's what made it. He was with the X. You remember the XWF at that time? That they were.
Yeah.
It was a company they were putting together in Orlando. It had like Jimmy Hart and I think Hogan was involved
and stuff like that.
You know, Jerry Lawler. Jerry Lawler was going to be the commentator with like Tony Schiavone, but WWF wanted him back and they decided to let Lawler out of his contract so he could go back to WWF. So that's how he ended up back there.
Amazing the way you remember all this stuff.
I know. I mean, I'm awesome.
Okay, I'll throw one out. The very first episode of Nitro and Luger showed up. That was pretty amazing because he had wrestled like a house show
the day before
or 2 days before.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. And then he just shows up.
Hey, what?
Wasn't he on, like, Raw that same night?
Yeah, because Raw
was
wasn't
on
right?
that night. Raw was preempted.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Or he was
thinking Rick Rude was on Rick Rude was on Nitro and Raw on the same night.
That's right. He was on, but like, Luger had just been on TV. Like, there was some show just, like, either Sunday or Saturday. There was something where he came out on, and then basically the next night, he was pretty much on Nitro.
Yeah.
Because he was teaming with the Bulldog.
Yeah, Bulldog had just turned heel, and I think they were going to do a little Luger Bulldog program like to start there. And but then he had no contract, and he just showed up.
Yeah. But it was all right.
That was just cool the way they kicked off that the very first Nitro to pull that. I mean,
yeah, that was something
crazy.
They needed on that first show.
Absolutely. I mean, that first Nitro had to do really well, and I'm positive it didn't do well in the ratings, but it had people talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what they needed. And they had people talking and
it was in that Mall of America in Minneapolis,
yeah.
I think. Yeah, and he had just got through eating a bowl of pasta at Pasta Mania, so then he did his run-in.
Yeah, and they did that. Was Medusa still not under contract when they pulled her over as well?
She was not under contract, and I think that was in December she showed up. And
Didn't she get fired?
I don't know if she got fired, but they weren't using her much at that point, even though she still was the champion. I think they're kind of phasing the women out, and she just kind of showed up.
Yeah, and dumped the title in the trash.
And then got bigger tits every year after that.
And now she has a big truck.
Mm-hmm.
That apparently might be in my town tomorrow night.
Tonight, oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not going.
You gotta hit the gym. You gotta go start working out. You're getting ready.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm getting.
Why aren't you going if that's that expensive? I mean, aren't child tickets $5?
I think they are actually, but
I never went up to the old monster truck fascination.
But a lot of people do because they come to the Alamo Dome a couple times a year and they always sell out.
Yeah. They actually, when they come here, they do a show on Friday, they do two shows on Saturday, and then they do a show on Sunday. And it's usually pretty well packed. And they sucker you in by offering, like Ed said, those $5 tickets. Yeah, you can get the building for $5-$10, but then when those sell out, people come up to the stand, yeah, give me one of them $10 tickets. And they're like, oh, those are all sold out. You're not going to get in your car and go home. Well, just give me the best you got.
I've only seen one monster truck thing. It was when that guy fell off of Cobalt Hall in Detroit.
And somehow he landed in the damn water.
I know. It was like miles and miles away from. He must have jumped out or something. He flew.
Like the Big Show caught a breeze on the way down and blew into
He had one of those military zip lines, you know, they go down, and he just held on until he hit the water. Oh, Christ.
I'll say this. I've only been to the Monster Truck shows maybe once or twice. And both times I've gone, I've compared the audience like this. If you have a scale, they're underneath pro wrestling fans. If you got like an NBA audience, if you got like an NBA audience about three quarters from the top, and then you've got like above that, you've got like the theater or the opera. Way down on the scale, you've got like pro wrestling, monster trucks, and motorcycle ice racing below that. And then way down on the bottom is the what we have in Kent called the Lingerie Football League. So, there you go.
What?
That should be at the top of the list, not the bottom.
No, for the audience.
Oh, man, okay.
Yeah.
Well, explain this Lingerie Football League.
We're changing
our lingerie, and they play football.
Well, there may be some more that's into it. That's why I'm asking. And Craig will know.
I've never been, but it's down the road in Kent where we've gone and saw the TNA shows a few times. Oddly enough, this is kind of a TNA show as well. But anyway,
There's a girl for the Houston lingerie team that actually wrestles here in River City Wrestling.
Well, there you go. Yeah,
this is a league or something?
Yeah, there's like, I think there's 8 teams around the nation or 6 teams around the nation. There's very few. And they wrestle, they have shoulder pads and I think they have knee pads, but then they wear very little besides that. They wear helmets, and they hit pretty hard. I've seen some clips on the shows and the news and stuff like that. We are the Seattle Mist. There you go.
Okay.
And they play football. Yeah.
Ed, you're next. Go ahead, throw something out.
I'll go with one of the probably one of the debuts that I hated the most, that it pretty much broke my heart, pretty much like made me question my loyalties to what organization that I supported, and that would be Black Saturday.
Where, I wasn't watching back then, so.
Where they had a fucking parade with a float with Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff on.
That wasn't Black Saturday.
What did they call it? They called it something.
Black Saturday is when Vince took over Georgia.
Yeah, I know. When you said that, I just kind of snapped. But they called, when Hulk Hogan debuted, they called it, it was something. I forgot what they called it. But
oh, it was a ticker tape parade.
When they had that stupid parade that, like, because I was, at that time, I was always an NWA fan over the WWF. You know, I preferred that style of wrestling to the WWF. And I was a big-time homer for the NWA, WCW at the time. You know, back them, and then all of a sudden, the freaking devil himself is on a parade. And it's like, what the fuck? And it wasn't very much longer when I became a WWF supporter over WCW.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember they had this press conference. They're supposed to be having the big press conference. Hogan signs the contract, and they take some questions, and he goes, what's your question, sir? Can we see the 24-inch Python Hulk, sir? Well, I didn't mind it that much because WCW was pretty down at that point anyways. That's pretty damn bad. And
it wasn't that much removed from the Dangerous Alliance.
Yeah, but they were getting like really WWF eyes. You remember when they were doing like 6 months worth of tapings in like 1 week at the worldwide things, and they had like 40 different people come out as different champions, so you know who was winning like the next few months, winning the titles the next few months or something like that. Oh, he still thought it was stupid. But, yeah. And then you had the Honky Tonk Man, Hacksaw Duggan beating Steve Austin in, like, 10 seconds, which I thought was pretty horrible.
Then you had the booty man.
Beefcake in the Starrcade main event. Give me a fucking break.
Right. That's what I tell you. It was, like, the worst day ever when Hulk Hogan debuted.
I didn't mind Hogan being in that much. It
ruined it for me. Seriously, ruined it. It hurt me. It's like I was betrayed. I was betrayed by the company I supported for all those years.
I was never one that I could really was more from one company over the other. I kind of watched them all equally. So
I watched them all equally, but I was in favor of one over the other one. That's correct.
Sorry?
Your thoughts on Hulk Hogan debuting WCW?
It was kind of to be expected. I mean, they already had Hall and Nash, and they were bringing everybody over. It's funny because
they didn't have Hall and Nash then.
What do you mean they had Hall and Nash?
They had Hall and Nash.
We're talking about when Hulk Hogan debuted for WCW, not when Hulk Hogan went heel in WCW.
My bad. He wasn't being used by Vince, so why not? You know?
I think he was just in Japan every now and then.
I mean, you drive a dump truck full of money onto a guy's lawn, and of course he's going to jump.
And really, it's a smart decision on whoever brought him in. I mean, if you can get Hulk Hogan, get him. It was like when Hogan joined TNA a few years ago, and I think he did this. And I saw some interview with, like Bubba Ray or something. He said, man, it takes balls to bring Hulk Hogan in here. Why? It's like it should be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Bring Hulk Hogan into your company. I mean, it's like, why would you not?
Well, see, that's what I was thinking of. When you started talking about this, I was thinking about the first time with TNA when they did the gimmick in Japan where Hogan was like, quote-unquote, in TNA,
but then he never did anything with him for over a year.
That's when Jeff Jarrett jumped him at the press conference or something.
Yeah, and he hit him with a guitar and a gig.
Because they were doing negotiations for Hogan to come to TNA, and then it just never happened.
Yeah, and it was the weirdest thing, and that's what I was thinking of when you guys were talking about that.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All the Nats weren't in TNA at the time.
Yes, they were.
No.
In TNA?
Oh,
yes.
Were they really?
All the Nats were in TNA at that time. I think so. Pretty sure.
Was this Hall?
Maybe it might have just been Scott Hall. Remember he got fired.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, because Nash, he did the... Remember, he stayed and he got hurt, and then he came back and did the cage match with Hunter, the Hell in a Cell match.
Okay.
Then he left.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And now where is he at?
Oh, I don't know. He's out there somewhere. I don't know where Scott Hall is, but I'm sure he's not in the best of shape.
That's probably true.
Speaking of Hogan, I'll go with this one. The return... When he faced off with The Rock in that promo, also in Chicago, when the NWO came back and then Hogan came out just to cut a promo, and The Rock came out, and that led to the match at WrestleMania. That was like one of the best promos of all time.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I hated Hulk Hogan for like years and years and years. And
sure.
Not just because he was the Goofy Hulk Hogan cartoon character. It all stems from reading an article on Pro Wrestling Illustrated by, I think, Eddie Ellner, where he criticized Hulk Hogan, compared him to Lyle Alzado, and really made Hulk Hogan look bad. And from there, I pretty much hated Hulk Hogan. And for years and years and years, anything Hulk Hogan related is just like, fuck this. And then he did that one interview leading up to the program with The Rock. I think it was when they tried to kill The Rock and run him over with the truck. But
yeah,
the promo that Hogan cut was just so damn good, he won me over after that. And all was forgiven.
Yeah, I think they had the dueling chants, one side's chant for Rock and other side's chant for Hogan. That was awesome. That was a money promo.
That match was so weird. The Mania match was so weird. You just expected everybody to be just absolutely nuts for The Rock, but nope, not in that town.
They were in Toronto, and next night
Bizarro World.
Yeah, it's like in Montreal, and Hogan's always got a great reception there, so
yeah.
It's kind of understandable.
Just. Nuclear heat.
I never hated Hulk Hogan. I mean, a lot of people did.
Yeah.
I hated when he got all the steroids because he didn't look right.
I genuinely feel sorry for the man when I see him today. I remember watching him last night, and his eyes just were all bloodshot, and you could just see the road has owned the man.
I just feel sorry for me having to sit through his long walk to the ring. I got better shit to be doing.
Yeah, you can time that guy with a sundial.
Oh, and speaking of returns and shitty returns, that Sting return last night was fucking awful.
Oh, brutal.
Terrible.
Yeah.
They got all these vignettes, like these cool-looking videos, you know, of I don't know what the date was. It was 1/3/13 or something like that. And hyping Sting coming back and right at the end. They don't even show him coming down the aisle. He just all of a sudden shows up right at the ringside with his bat, and he's still wearing his T-shirt and his tights. I mean, like if it was WWF, there'd be like some kind of special pyro or some special
absolutely.
Or something like that.
A camera on that ramp.
He just randomly walks down like he was there last week.
Yeah.
That was so stupid.
That was no good.
Hmm.
Part of it. There's one you could throw out. How about Sting when he returned with the crow gimmick?
Yeah, I thought that was cool. Cause That was like one of my favorite movies. So I like the whole get up, the whole Crow get up, and talk about a guy that's able to sit out for a long time, and you know he didn't have to do shit for like a year. Just to learn how to rappel from the ceiling.
Yeah, they filmed him up in the rafters for weeks upon end, and then apparently finally got down and then debuted. It was kind of cool.
That shows you how much talent they had back then, that they could hold him off for so long.
Right.
Because they were just loaded with, they must have had like 60 people on the roster at that point. Now, but a shitload of main event guys, so they could hold Sting off from wrestling for a whole year.
Wasn't it Honky Tonk Man that said he got paid by that company for almost a year before they realized he was gone?
I thought that was Leap and Lanny Puffle.
Him too, huh?
Leap and Lanny, he got like a $150,000 a year contract. He was going to come in and play like the Gorgeous George or something, some kind of Gorgeous George character. And he had the contract. He never called him to come to work for like a year or two. He stayed home, collected $150,000.
Unbelievable.
A lot of guys did that.
Yeah.
A lot of companies had a fucking business.
So one thing about the Crow gimmick is that the first like week or two, I thought it was cool. And then it just was the same thing week after week after week. And I just like was like, what the fuck? And to be honest with you, by the time a lot of people... The beginning of the end came with the finger poke, or the basically the not the finger poke, but the when they had the match.
They finished that match where you're supposed to count fast and count slow.
Yeah, and people were kind of pretty much that was the beginning of the end after the match. For me, it was the beginning of the end before because I was just so tired of seeing that doing anything that honestly I really didn't give a fuck by the time the match happened.
That's fair.
And you had a great year-long build to such a shitty match. God. That match. He just pinned the guy. He's out for a year. He's a big hero. He's going to save WCW. He pinned him clean right in the middle of the fucking ring. That's what killed him to me.
You're still bitter about it.
And then a few months later, he joins the Wolfpack. Okay, you've been hanging out in the rafters for a year because of these fucking guys. Now you join them. That's so stupid.
Yeah,
they screwed things up an awful lot. Real quick.
I tell you, Eric Bischoff, it's like he killed the AWA.
Real quick, before we have to throw out the plugs, I remember seeing Dustin Rhodes have this amazing battle in the back of a hay truck, bleeding like crazy.
That wasn't a debut or a return. That was an exit.
Hold on, I ain't done. I remember seeing Dustin Rhodes do that, and the next thing you know, there's some guy in gold face paint on my television, and I remember asking Brian, "That's not Dustin Rhodes, is it?" And he goes, "Yeah." I was crushed. Really? Dustin Rhodes.
It was horrible when you first saw the character.
Oh yeah, it was horrendous. I thought it was the worst thing ever. And
then
it turned out to be amazing. And I think because of his wife. But that character, when I first saw it, I was offended, appalled, angry. And then it was like, okay, he's all right.
Homophobe. I just remember the car chase. With the gold Cadillac and the white Bronco at WrestleMania that year after the backflip brawl. And it was like OJ footage.
Yeah.
Now, were you really that surprised that he did it, considering that Dusty always had a little bit of a gay element to him or the way he would act?
I don't know. I just, like I said, the last thing I saw, Dustin Rhodes, he was having an amazing match in the back of a hay truck, bleeding like a stuck pig. And then he's on my TV on vignettes in gold face paint going, and I'm like, no, come on now. And
did you ever see the pictures of when Dusty Rhodes' team was Adrian Street in Florida?
Really?
Yeah. Well, if you would have seen those pictures, it'd be very easy to see to accept Dustin as Goldust, because to me, Dusty, I don't want to say Dusty ever portrayed himself to be gay, but he always would, every once in a while, would act a little feminine in the ring just to, like,
yeah,
get pumped for the guys. But, yeah,
I know you're talking
to me, it was almost, like, perfect for Dustin to do that. It was just him carrying it even a lot further. And
I remember the really big reaction was, remember in 98, you remember when he burned the Gold Dust outfit and just went back to being Dustin Rhodes in WWE?
Yeah.
He did that, and he kept carrying the sign and said, he's coming back. And that's when he would do that goofy stuff, like, he'd sit down with Jerry Lawler and JR at ringside when they're announcing a match and ask them if they've accepted Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. And they tell him it ain't none of your damn business. And that's when Val Venis, you know, the video with him and Terry, you know, puffed up in that angle. And then Val was out there. And then the Gold Dust music hit, and Bill Gold Dust makes a big return, and that crowd was going crazy for the guy. And I thought that was awesome stuff.
And then the worst thing that ever happened to the guy, Vince Russo's in charge over at TNA, and he brings him in, and okay, let me see, you're in gold at the other company, so we're going to put you in silver.
He must have watched that movie Powder or something right before.
Well, no, that was in WCW. That wasn't the TNA character. TNA character is Black Rain. You're thinking of Seven in
Black
WCW. Rain.
Yeah.
Where Black he made his debut and he said, "Would you people just look at what in the hell I'm wearing?" He did his big promo.
Black Rain. That was
That was Black
like
Rain when
months.
He had the rat. Remember when he had the rat?
Yeah.
He looked like he was big, and he looked like he was wearing a hefty garbage sack.
Mm-hmm. Freaking Russo. My goodness.
Well, everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows, like the Angry Mark Show, the O Show, and a whole bunch of other shows at angrymarks.com. So everyone check them out. You can also check us out at blogtalkradio.com/Cotrere and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can friend me at Facebook at Edward Laredo or Ed in San Antonio, and you can follow me on Twitter at Ed in San Antonio. And you can start retweeting all of our plugs that we do for the show.
Yes. You can send all your complaint letters at properjam@twitter.com for my lack of attention tonight. I apologize.
Everybody go to youtube.com/Cotrere. I got a bunch of old wrestling stuff up there. I actually got a miscellaneous section on there now. It's got a bunch of movies and stuff. Actually found the remake of one of my favorite films of all time, Red Dawn, up there right now that just came out this past year. So anybody wants to check that out, they can.
You got one for The Hobbit, man, because I downloaded this one in this IPK, and when it started, the picture was perfectly clear, and then I got the fucking pop-up that said that they couldn't play the soundtrack.
What, you watch The Hobbit?
Yeah, so I didn't get to watch it because it was
sound.
Did
you have trouble sleeping or something, so you watched that?
Fuck you, I like The Hobbit.
It was awesome.
Lord of the Ring movies were off.
I've seen it twice.
I'm getting tired just thinking about it.
That's because you are a hobbit.
I'm a hobbit, I'm 6 feet tall.
Well, he's got you there.
Well, anyway, find me a damn link that works to have sound, okay?
Or how about
here's a movie for you guys to check out that I was watching on I can rent a movie on Xbox video here, and I was looking for a good horror movie or something to watch the other day, and I found like another remake of one of my favorite movies of all time. It was a remake of I Spit on Your Grave. Any of you guys ever see that?
No.
I've never seen either one of them, but I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Oh my God, this was like the greatest film of all time.
Better than the original?
Yes. Better than the original. I don't throw out some spoilers right here because I'm excited about talking about this stuff. So anyway, this girl, she's a writer, and she's like has this cabin. She gets this cabin out in the woods in this little town, and she's going to write a book or something, and kind of runs afoul of the local hillbillies, and so they attack her, and they gang rape her, and the sheriff of the town is involved and stuff, and they're gonna try to kill her, but she gets away, like jumps in the river or something, and she's missing for I think it's like a month or so. And they figure she's dead. But then she comes back, and anybody that's like a fan of revenge movies should definitely check this out, because I love revenge movies. And she ties one of the guys up. She sits him down, and she wraps duct tape around his neck and ties him to a tree or something. And then she takes fish hooks and puts them in his eyelids and pulls them back so his eyes are stuck open. Then she gets a fish and rubs it all over his face, and so the crows come down and poke his eyes out.
Oh, nice.
And then she takes one of those old porcelain bathtubs, and she lays one of the guys across of his face down with these boards, and she fills it with water, so the water's just like right up to the person's face, so they have to lift their head out. So their face won't be in the water. And then she takes one of the boards out, and which that makes them have to like really use all their strength to like lift their head up and keep their head up so it doesn't hit the water. And then she takes a bucket of lye and puts it in the water. So he's just sitting there, all his strength to hold his head up. You got this lye filled water. Finally, he can't take it anymore and just face down in a lie, just like burns his face off.
Yummy.
Another one, she straps one of them to, she ties one of them up and like pulls his teeth out one by one with pliers. It's pretty neat. Then she cuts his dick off and sticks it in his mouth, and he bleeds out. And then finally, she gets the sheriff and she pulls his pants down and shoves a shotgun up his asshole. And then the gun goes off, and it's just like, well, you can imagine. This was awesome.
Sounds like the worst movie ever.
It was. It was one of the most despicable, deplorable things I've ever seen. It was awesome.
I will never see that movie.
Well, you owe it to yourself to do so.
I will never see that movie.
Feel better.
No. I think it'll keep me up.
Well, it sure does have a thick sense of whatever. Wow. Makes sense to movies. But,
these movies, I just watch them.
It still makes you a sick person, whether you made it or we'll just watch it.
Oh, goodness.
You have issues. But I guess we can go ahead and wrap up. Do we have anything planned for next week or anything?
Still working on that one guest. I can't seem to hammer down a time with him. I'll throw some things out and we'll get a guest. I'll try. I'm having horrible luck this year. Granted, it's only the first show, but I'm having horrible luck this year.
Some things never change.
Yeah.
You got any parting words, Craig?
I'm going to go take some TheraFlu and a warm bath.
Okay. And Katrina, do you get any parting words?
No. I just want to hang up the phone and go do some stuff.
There you go.
Cool. Well, I'm sure Daz and a few people are hoping I'll tell a story, but I'm actually going to wait till later. So I'll tell that story at a later date. So everyone, come back next week. We'll have something going on. So everyone come back next week, and we will see everybody then.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
have found out how good you are, you're looking at the matrix shit. Let's go hook him up.
Tonight.